This is Fresh Air. Peter Bagg's comic book series, Hate, has been described as a chronicle of low-life culture and style. The main character is a loser named Buddy Bradley. He's cynical, paranoid, and lazy, somewhere between a knowledgeable hipster and a bitter crank. The latest development in Buddy's life is he's gotten a job managing a grunge rock band in Seattle. Seattle is also home to the artist Peter Bagg. Bagg has been at work in the world of underground comics since Punk magazine first accepted his work in 1979. Soon after, R. Crumb asked Bagg to edit Weird magazine. Then in 1985, the publishers Fantagraphics gave Bagg his own series, Neat Stuff. He's since turned down proposals to make his characters into a TV show. He even turned down an offer to write for The Simpsons. I asked Bagg how he came up with the main character in Hate Comics, Buddy Bradley.
Well, it was based partly on myself and partly on a lot of friends of mine from my high school days. He's based on myself to the extent that I can at least empathize with everything that he says and does. But I used a lot of people I knew more as a prototype. He's more typical of them rather than me, simply because a lot of my friends had much larger chips on my shoulders than I did. So they'd be inclined to act before they thought and say all these horrible things that they, whether they really believed it or not, as far as making sexist or racist comments was kind of besides the point. It was just all how reflective of their incredibly bad attitudes and attitude towards life. He started out as part of the Bradley family, which again was based on my family and families in my neighborhood, your typical dysfunctional family, I guess, to use an overused term. Since then, I just got tired of writing about the Bradley family and decided to age Buddy Bradley a bit and make him a young pseudo-bohemian type living in an inner city and hanging out with his friends. And that's pretty much what Hate is based on.
Yeah, and how did you come up with the title of Hate for the series, Hate Comics?
It's partly a reaction to the comic book I was doing previously, which, as you mentioned, was called Neat Stuff. And even though the material in Neat Stuff was pretty adult, pretty cynical, there sometimes would be some confusion with people thinking it would be more of a friendly, lighthearted comic, or at worst, a kiddie comic, just because its title was Neat Stuff, which now I understand is the name of a line of pretty sappy greeting cards. So part of it was an overreaction to make it clear as to what kind of material to expect. And plus, I wanted to stay within the tradition of humor comics of keeping a short, snappy name that's pretty easy to remember. Plus, a lot of my friends, when I first decided to call it Hate, they were a little worried that people would think that there's some kind of neo-Nazi slant to it, and they'd have to make excuses to their friends for associating with me. But surprisingly, that's never happened. I've never gotten any flack for the comic book being called Hate, which I guess was a bit of a disappointment. We thought we could maybe milk some publicity out of that, but it hasn't worked.
In Hate Number One, you know, the first in the series, you cynically refer to yourself as Mr. Negative Energy himself.
Right. Well, I guess just with the comic book Hate and with calling it Hate and with people asking me why, that was my stock answer, so that I'm Mr. Negative Energy, so I just threw that in there.
I'd like our listeners to see your drawing, but short of that, I think you'd probably do a better job at describing it than I would.
Drawing my cartooning style?
Mm-hmm.
Well, real rubbery, I guess, would be the best way to describe it. It's very cartoony. You know, lots of big noses, and nobody has elbows or knees. I used to try to work that in there with bent elbows and knees, but it always seemed to get in the way with what I was trying to say. So now that seems to be a trademark that people always point out, is that all my characters' limbs curve and sway all over the place. And all my characters also, as a result, tend to be pretty thin, just because it's easier to move them around. And also, I guess my comics are noted for the way that when two people, their arguments or whatever is going on between them comes to a head, they tend to almost physically blow up, or their heads and mouths just grow to huge proportions. As time goes by, I worry less and less about keeping things in proportion and am not afraid to exaggerate as much as I feel gets the point across.
If you're just joining us, my guest is comic strip artist Peter Bagg, and his series include Hate Comics. Earlier on, he did the Bradleys and Neat Stuff. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is comic artist Peter Bagg. Let me get you to describe your character of Studs Kirby.
Well, when I first started doing comics in earnest, this is going back 14 years ago when I was still in art school, he was one of two characters I was working with regularly, and that reflected two sides of my personality. And with him, again, it was almost like I don't work with him anymore because he's not too different from Buddy and his friends, where, again, he wears his heart on his sleeve and he's very politically incorrect, just says and does all the things that all of us maybe in our worst moments might think, but that most of us don't do. But he just wouldn't hold back. And because he was so boisterous, eventually it seemed just a natural to make him a talk show host. And again, originally, too, I kind of exaggerated his whole routine on the radio as far as being a talk show host, of being, needless to say, pretty right-wing, but real fuzzy about his ideology. But it would be fuzzy to a listener, but not to him. He thought he had everything all figured out, and it would be very bombastic. And I used to worry that he was too much of an exaggeration, but since then, I can remember while I was still working with him, Morton Downey came out with his television show, and I saw that, and I thought, this guy makes my cartoon character look like a regular human. Like, compared to my comic character, Morton Downey is much more of a cartoon character. And since then, it seems like there's been an explosion of outrageous talk show hosts that it almost put my character to shame. He seemed a little too tame.
One of the things I love about Studs Kirby is, you know, he relaxes to Pete Fountain records, and his favorite singers are Brenda Lee and Doris Day. Uh-huh. Is this another side of you musically?
Well, yeah. I guess almost the way you would say that he says and does things that I might think but wouldn't readily admit to, or it's part of my behavior, my control. Also, the music he listens to is music that I don't exclusively listen to, but I do enjoy. But I have to be pretty selective about when and to who I might bring it up, saying, oh, I love Bert Kampfert. Half the time you have to explain who he is. It's also a bit based on my father, too, who didn't necessarily listen to those women singers, but he listened to music of that type, and he loved Bert Kampfert. When I was a kid, I hated Bert Kampfert because I heard it coming from the downstairs in the middle of the night all the time, but you know, the apple never falls far from the tree, and I listen to a lot of music now that my father used to listen to.
Well, I'm not going to speak on behalf of Bert Kampfert, but I will say, you know, you have a sympathetic ear here with Doris Day.
Oh, yeah, great voice. Yeah, she was, again, yeah. That was somebody that, when I was young, those movies, it would make me rich. Now mm-hmm. I think they're a riot. And also just...
some of her early records are really good.
Right, and even her sappiest records that, again, used to drive me up the wall when I was younger, one day just dawned on me, she has a beautiful voice. It's like her image is so dominant in the culture, people think so much of her as being so, squeaky clean that it obscures the fact that she has a stunning voice, at least in my opinion.
And the inside of the cover, you often show off somebody else's art.
Right.
And you make recommendations of some of your favorites, and you've got a sketch in one of them of the Kirby Stone 4.
Right.
who had the real, like, Squaresville version of Bubbles, Bangles, and Beads.
Right. that's another group that...
Your dad loved.
He didn't have... I'm sure he liked it because he would listen to those corny stations where they'd play them a lot. And again, they would drive me up the wall. And then all of a sudden, one day, it just... hit me, and I just once jokingly said that I liked the Kirby Stone 4 in an editorial, and that led to a bunch of tapes. People sent me a whole bunch of tapes, and then I became a connoisseur of them. Although, something that's very disappointing is when you hear that particular record, Baubles, Spangles, and Beads, which was their biggest hit, it sounds like there's 40 people singing instead of 4, and there's a lot of women singing, and I always thought the women's voices really made the record. And it turns out there aren't any women in the Kirby Stone 4, that they didn't get any credit or anything. So it's kind of a shame. So for that reason, I kind of, at this point, kind of hate them. Because they use these anonymous women to give themselves a hit record. When they sing with just the four of them, they don't sound so good.
I think it was your character of Buddy who once worked for Muzak or almost worked for Muzak.
Right.
Did you ever have a job like that, identifying songs?
Again, no, I didn't. But again, what I was trying to think of a dopey job that might have driven him crazy, just to use it as as an example in that story. And again, so many people in this town, like the fellows I was referring to before who work for Sub Pop and a lot of the musicians here, they work for a local factory that makes the Muzak tapes that you hear in stations. And they tend to, again, they take the job as a joke. They figure, well, I could work at Burger King, but wouldn't it be hilarious if I made Muzak tapes for a living? Since, you know, when I go home, I listen to all this noisy rock and roll. And, of course, it does wind up driving some of them nuts. They just can't take it anymore. But it's also amazing how many of them have been working there for years. They wind up loving it. So I guess, you know, they'll probably wind up just listening exclusively to Bert Kampfert like I did.
How old were you when you started cartooning? I don't mean professionally, but when you just started doing it on your own.
Well, I did it off and on quite a bit for as long as I can remember. And my main reason for doing it was simply because my older brother did it. He was a real natural. And in fact, I tend to think that because cartooning, just doing simple, amusing type comic strips and gags came so easy to him that he never really developed any work habits towards it. Whereas I did, I always had to work twice as hard to be half as good as he was. So eventually he just got bored of it, whereas I continued to grind away. And I did get sidetracked quite a bit, as a lot of cartoonists do when I entered art school. Everybody seems to, all the teachers there, try to steer you away from comics and anything else, fine art or even illustration. But so I tried hard to see if I could make it at anything else, illustration or whatever. But the only thing I had any inkling for, not only artistically, but for anything. I was always been completely unemployable except for doing comics. So I do this by default. I don't have any options.
Let me get back to your comics about Buddy. You ran a Buddy look-alike contest.
Right.
And you asked your readers to do what?
Just send in a picture, of course, more than one, preferably, and just keep write a short description. Or actually, I said, as long as they wanted, just explaining why they're just like Buddy Bradley. And originally, I got like hardly any responses. They were coming in really slow. I thought the contest was going to be a dud. But again, in typical Buddy Bradley fashion, they all waited to the very last minute. And then I got tons and tons of entries. And it was pretty horrifying to open up envelope after envelope of all these guys that look just like Buddy Bradley with their hair and their face. And some of them got testimonials from past employers talking about, you know, what a ne'er-do-well this guy was. And it was like they actually called up a guy that fired them to type up a letter about how they were the worst employee they ever had. And they'd send it to me. Their girlfriends would write testimonials about how cheap and lazy they are. The final winner, though, was a guy. He lives in New York City, works for Tower Records, and his testimonial was all he wrote was, "I am just like Buddy Bradley because I am just like Buddy Bradley," which may sound like a cop-out, but it kind of also fit the description of being pretty lazy. And his picture, it's going to be the cover of number 10, and it's horrifying. I guarantee you that if you'll find it impossible to believe that this is a real human being. He looks so much like this character. Every time I show it to the picture of this guy to people, they just go, "Oh, my God."
I think what he wrote you sounds almost like a Zen cone, you know?
Right. Yeah.
In its simplicity and elliptical nature.
Right.
So listen, you're a father now. You live in the suburbs, right?
Well, I live in a house. It's in the city of Seattle, but I guess coming from when people visit us from New York City, they say it's the suburbs. Right. So yeah,
is Buddy going to become a father?
Well, I really like to put a lot of distance between what's happening to me in my life now and what I do in comics. Like for example, I'm 34 now, and Buddy is Bradley, the person I'm doing stories about now, is roughly 24. So I like to put a lot of distance between what's happening to me and when I write about it. Just I could laugh about it a bit better, view it more objectively. And yeah, everybody keeps saying, "Are we going to see a lot of cute kitty comics from you?" And no, because she's not two yet. And being a dad, it's still not that funny. She's a real handful. So I figure if I'm ever going to do anything about little kids, it's going to be a while.
Does this help you live your life without wondering what kind of comic it's going to make, since you have a distance between what you're cartooning about and what you're living?
Well, the stories build up. Like, even when something happens to me, I might say there's a story in this. But if the story is worth doing, if it's a worthwhile story idea, it'll stay with me. I used to even write the ideas down, but that just wasn't necessary anymore. I've found out that if a story was really worth doing, it would stay with me for a long time. And it just seems, usually 5-10 years down the road, it'll just seem like the time is right to put it down on paper.
Listen, after the Buddy Bradley lookalike contest, did you have this kind of sick feeling that you were encouraging the wrong thing in your readers, that they were taking things maybe a little too literally?
No. Well, I haven't met, fortunately, many of these people. It seems pretty obvious to me that they realize it's a joke, and I'm sure they comb their hair a little different or exaggerated just to fit the description. But at the same time, too, I'm sure that they were exactly like my character even before they started reading my book or entered this contest. So, yeah, I'm ducking all responsibility.
Well, Peter Bagg, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Okay, well, thank you very much for having me.
Comic book artist Peter Bagg lives in Seattle. His current series, Hate Comics, is published by Fantagraphics. This is Fresh Air.